To begin with, right, we're going to be doing an interview. My name is Reynaldo Falcon. I will be interviewing... What's your name?
My name is Alejandro Araque.
Could you spell your name?
A-L-E-J-A-N-D-R-O. That's Alejandro, like the Lady Gaga song. Then it's Araque, which is A-R-A-Q-U-E.
Perfect. All right. Well, personally, it's, you know, this is a virtual interview. I am in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, and the narrator here is in...
I'm unfortunately in Ohio.
Unfortunately. All right. Do I have permission to record this interview?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. So we're going to start with a couple of base questions to go through. So when were you born? If you don't mind giving me that information.
Yeah, no, I was born in 2001. I'm 22, I think.
Yeah, 22. All right. Oh, yeah, really?
Mm-hmm.
21. Okay, I'm a 2002 kid.
Yeah, I'm 22.
Great. Then where were you born?
I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, but I've lived all over the place, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. What about the, is that where you were raised, or? Because I know you moved around quite a lot.
Yeah, I was raised in Texas, I was raised in Norway, England, and Puerto Rico, so.
I didn't know about the Norway. That's a new one. Wow. Okay. Apart from that, that's actually impressive. Jeez. So then, where are you currently now are in Ohio?
Yeah, I'm living in Ohio because that's where I go to university at Miami University in Ohio. But I'll be in Boston again soon because I'm gonna graduate.
Perfect. So you graduate this
family
year.
Which, yeah, in a couple months.
That's great. So what are you graduating of? It's your bachelor's.
Actually, yeah, I'm in creative writing, so similar to what we're interviewing today.
Great, yeah, that's something I want to kind of get into because you know, you're someone that I've known since high school, so I know quite a lot about your background and your story. Can I ask you a little bit about that? So I want to go a little bit deeper into why you picked this field of study. I know before you were studying something else, so I kind of want to hear your thoughts on that process of you know, finalizing you know, ending up on creative writing and what you were
doing before. Yeah, so you want me to just talk about, like, the history, like, what I was in before, why I switched, and stuff like that?
That'd be nice if I hear a little bit about that.
So, I used to be in zoology because I love science. I've always loved science. You know, it's been something I've been able to really connect to a lot more than some other stuff. So, I loved science and exploring that. So, I wanted to be a zoologist. It came after watching a bunch of David Attenborough documentaries. But I did switch because, for one, I don't like chemistry at all, and there's a lot of chemistry I had to go through to get to the actual zoology topics, and it was just not my style. It wasn't what I wanted to spend all my time kind of focusing and studying on. But also, I could have pushed through the chemistry if I had something more to look forward to. The thing I loved about zoology is the field work, you know, being able to work out in nature, either surrounded by animals or like nature itself, you know, experiencing different habitats and climates and environments. That was all really cool to me. Again, like the David Attenborough documentaries where he would go all over the world. I wanted to do something like that. But I mean, this wasn't mentioned in the interview yet so far, but my disability is a physical one. I'm in a wheelchair, I can't walk. I have SMA type 2, which is just a muscular atrophy. That just makes my body really weak. So I can't walk, which means getting into natural environments is difficult and navigating them is difficult, you know, camping, all that stuff. It's a lot of work. And I'm not saying it's not possible, you know, I'm sure there are people who, if they really, really, really want to do that, they'll find a way. But getting what I need to do that level of work, which I don't even know if I could reach, it's just more work than I was willing to put in. I didn't have the motivation to go through all the hoops that I would have to go through probably to get there. So I decided to switch because, you know, we kind of started becoming friends through Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And I realized looking back that I love writing characters and stories. So swapped over to creative writing and I've had a lot of fun with it. So that's kind of the story of my switch and like why and what I was into and all that stuff. Still love nature, still love zoology, you know, that just not at a study and get tested on it kind of way.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna say that too. I mean, I don't want to get too mushy because I don't like it, but the reason why I'm taking the class is also because of you, because I don't know, you got to start getting into a lot of creative writing classes and all that, and then you end up switching to that bachelor's, and then yeah, you know, I saw this class that was open, and I'm like, all right, great. I also remember those times in Dungeons and Dragons, and thank you for the inspiration, man. It's been a great class too. And then also, you know, apart from that, I wanted to go into how are you feeling into you know, being in this line of study now?
Well, creative writing.
Yeah. What are your experiences so far in it?
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. Like, I've met a lot of really cool people because they're really like-minded people. I don't know, English majors, I guess, especially for like writing majors, not so much like the literature ones, but the writing ones, they tend to kind of, we all tend to have like very similar personalities, in the sense that like some of us are introverted, some of us are extroverted, but we all, like, we're all very open and honest, you know, we all write, that's what we do, and we want criticism on what we do to be better, so like we're all very open-minded and always open to like hearing each other's opinions. So it's like a very friendly, open conversation during class all the time, which is really nice. But other than that, like, creative writing has been super fun. I've been able to explore and start opening up about some stuff I was like not sure if I wanted to write yet or not. I've got more confidence. I've started like working on big projects that I've always wanted to do. The only thing is, it's kind of stressful because, unlike I would say most sciences, where you have more of a guarantee of a job, there's a lot of people looking for scientists or people with scientific backgrounds. You know, you can show your grades and like what you're capable of and get different kinds of job opportunities.
Yeah.
With writing, it's a lot more, I don't know, it can go any way really, because a lot of what I hear around, unfortunately, is like, oh, you know, your skills really transfer over to communications. I'm like, I don't want to do communications. I want to be in publishing, editing. I'm good at that. And I haven't got that much guidance on there. So it's a bit more of like, you know, with any creative major, it's more of a shot in the dark where you have to build a portfolio and then kind of figure out how to market yourself. So that's its whole thing. It's more uncertain, but okay.
Yeah,
I'm not too afraid because I have, you know, supportive family that I can lean on until I find my pacing and stuff like that.
It's nice. Great. So
yeah,
perfect. So then, okay, I wanted to continue on that line of study. So I know you're studying in you know, you're about to graduate from your university, but I wanted to kind of ask you about that experiences of kind of navigating physically throughout you know, your campus. So at least, you know, when it comes to, you know, physical spaces and your buildings and streets nearby where you live in Ohio, how has it been? How has accessibility been for you? Or your, has the space hindered you? Are you still being able to move around as easy as someone who is abled or normal bodied, if you want to consider it that way?
Yeah, able bodied.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. Yeah. It's not as bad as it could be. Like, I've definitely been to places because I've traveled a lot. I've been to places where it's a lot worse. It's not perfect, but I'm also not in the city, so it's not like we have the money to make everything perfect for everybody, which is fine. Let me think. So some of the sidewalks in the town are kind of old and cracked. They don't bother me because I'm a relatively like capable person. I can manage some tougher terrain. But it does tire me a bit sometimes if I have to go like further distances if I'm not taking the bus. Buildings on campus, well, buildings in town are okay. Houses, not so much, but I don't visit many people anyway. I'm an introverted person. Buildings on campus, they all have an accessible entrance and they all have accessible facilities like an elevator or nearby accessible bathrooms and stuff like that, which is nice because that space is important. But a lot of the buildings are really old, which means the elevator is sometimes really small, or there's only one entrance on like the back side of the building, so I have to go like all the way around and like up a hill, or like I have to go in through specific paths to be able to get to where I need to go sometimes, which when I'm starting a semester is kind of its own time sink because I have to know and understand the layouts of the buildings to be able to navigate them. It's not awful. Like, it's not that bad.
It's still workable.
Yeah, but there are very specific entrances that I have to go for and like look for. because they don't all have like the accessible button to open the door automatically either. So there's that. And then there's a couple pads that have stairs. I don't take those pads, but they are there, which means for me to get to the same place, if I were to go that way, I would have to go the long way around instead of like a shorter path. So like with in general, you know, navigating architecture and stuff like that, it's a time. It's more time I have to spend than other people do, which isn't a big deal saying it like that, but I don't think people realize how much time and energy that adds up to throughout the day when you're moving between classes all the time.
Okay. I want to also, you know, comment on the fact that I just study here in the University of Puerto Rico, Mayagüez campus, and I'm studying theoretical physics here. And I know a lot of the classrooms, some of them are, I think you call them amphitheaters. Those are, you know, it's really rough. There's a lot of stairs. So it's like a, you know, it's a big theater room. I mean, at least in my building specifically, I wouldn't consider it the most, I mean, I wouldn't at all consider it. You know, I guess in that case, you know, this people with, friendly towards people with disabilities. I think we just got the elevator running not too long ago, and it's been down for maybe I don't know how much, but I know it's been something close to the half a decade. So I want to ask you, it is really rough. So I was thinking one day, see if you can come by and spend time, but I realized it's probably not the best, most friendliest streets and places, you know, in this. The type of context,
I mean, you know, when I was in Puerto Rico, it was the same situation. Like, it was Dorado was okay because it didn't go anywhere else outside of the neighborhood.
Yeah,
but Puerto Rico is not accessible like anywhere. Like, if you go to Viejo San Juan or if you go anywhere really that isn't like modernized and updated, being in an electric wheelchair is just not possible. Like, there are curbs everywhere. The terrain is like uneven. No building has elevators because they're all old. There's no space. Like, it's not updated for people with physical disabilities. And like, same with the public. There's no public transportation in Puerto Rico. So unless you have a car, which is also very difficult to get onto the island. You can't really go anywhere. So, yeah, Puerto Rico isn't disability, like physical disability friendly at all.
I see. You know, you probably end up going to, you know, El Viejo San Juan. You see cobbled streets everywhere. I mean, it's yeah, the streets themselves aren't friendly. I mean, it's. I mean, I can imagine. I was gonna talk
about go there on a bike. I mean, I can't imagine even trying to go there on a wheelchair. It's crazy.
Yeah. So then, based off of these type of things you've you know, experienced, how do you think you can, you know, what can someone like an architect or a designer do to try to make these spaces more inclusive for people like you?
It's rough because a lot of places like my campus is a lot of really old buildings. So updating them isn't in the infrastructure. So they would need to be completely torn down and rebuilt. But if they were to do that, you know, important details are like, make sure every entrance is as accessible as the other one. Don't make it so like, oh, it's more convenient over here, so we'll make this one the accessible entrance. There's no reason to do that. Just make them all accessible. It doesn't take much. Even if there's a step, you can pave over that with a cement and make like a small hill or a bump or something to like a ramp to ramp up to the curb, you know?
I see.
Make sure, you know, those spaces are wide enough to allow not just for the wheelchair to go through, but for traffic to go through as well, like foot traffic. Make sure the elevators aren't teeny tiny, because some of them are really small, and like, you can't even turn around. I can't even turn around in them. So making sure they're big enough for at least like 5 people would be also big enough for somebody in a wheelchair and a couple other people. So that's important, you know, just make sure that there's no, I don't know, inconvenience getting anywhere specifically. And, you know, preempt any need, because if there's stairs, that limits a lot of people, not even just people with like wheelchairs, people who have broken their leg and need a scooter or something like that, yeah. You know, that slows them down too. So, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, that was something I was I think it's a thought that's always come into my mind, and I've always kind of been a little bit worried about it. Because you have these fire escapes, and you have accidents, and you have say for example, at least in Puerto Rico, we've experienced quite a lot of earthquakes, hurricanes, of course, and then it's been a bit of everything here. Do you believe that in the buildings you currently inhabit, right, be it your dorms or your classroom buildings or whatever it would be, do you think you have easy access to fire exits?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been in an emergency situation, so I don't know how that would go. If I'm not on the first floor, I don't have a fire exit, obviously. I don't have a way out. So
Yeah,
I
you
found
can.
myself just kind of accepting and being trusting in the fact that somebody in the commotion is capable of. I'm a light guy. I'm not heavy. I'm like 70 pounds at most. Somebody like getting me out of my chair and just carrying me out of a burning building, that's fine. I don't care if it's uncomfortable or anything. But it's still a danger. It's still an uncertainty. Even if I'm on the first floor, there are some buildings where, like, because of the limited entrances, there are also therefore limited exits. If the fire so happens to be in one of those directions, I just can't get out. So I'm at the mercy of having to wait for the fire department or whatever's going on to be able to get
Jesus.
there. And also, I have to let them know where I am, which I don't know how I would always do that, because sometimes there are no like fire emergency buttons or whatever. I don't know how it works specifically. But yeah, it's a lot of trusting the community around me. Which I do. I trust people to help. There's a lot of professors and stuff like that, like mature adults who are trained to be able to be reasonable in an emergency. So,
Okay.
but there's no self, like I there's no self-actualization. It's not on me to escape. It's on somebody else to help me escape.
I see.
So it's just dependency, I guess.
That's a little bit horrible. That's something I kind of came up to my mind as we were talking right now. 'Cause I mean, I know, for example, you have a certain type of, let's say, it could be a fire inside the building. It could be an earthquake. And in those cases, I'd assume you don't. It's always recommended not to use an elevator, but that's your only way to get down. At least by
Yeah.
myself, it'll be a lot, a little bit more of an issue. And like you mentioned, yeah, I'd assume then you need help from someone else to get you down. All
Yep,
right.
exactly.
Well, now I want to kind of, take us to another side of I guess of a city's infrastructure and see how you manage throughout those. How do you? What have been your typical experiences with public transportation? I know that's something you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, and I kind of also want to dig into that and see your experiences here in Puerto Rico, there in Ohio, and I guess throughout your life.
Yeah, so that's a great question because, like you just mentioned, it depends on where I am. And I've lived in so many places, so I have a lot of experiences to share. In Texas, when I lived there, I don't know because we had our own accessible van, so I could get anywhere, anytime, whenever I wanted. So that was nice. That was a commodity that we had. In Norway, we also had an accessible van, but sometimes we would also use public transportation sometimes. And it was technically good. The buses and stuff like that, and the trains all had like ramps available and stuff like that. The problem was, I don't think there were many people that needed that in my area. So in Stavanger is where I live. So they were all. With the buses, the ramps were so unused that they were like somewhat stuck to the bus itself. They were like those where they have a handle and you have to pull on the handle and flip it out, right? It was a manual ramp. But they were so old and unused that they were like caked onto the platform with dirt and debris, I imagine, and just like old and used.
That's
I don't know.
disgusting.
They just, it's gross. And it also was like very stiff. So sometimes I remember there would be times when like the bus driver would be trying to get it out. It wouldn't work. We'd have to like pull out somebody's key or like an unused card or something
Just
and
to
like
chip at
wedge it
it.
in and try to just like peel it off and like finally get a grip onto it.
God.
I don't know if they've updated that since then, because that was a long time ago. So that was that issue. And with the trains, you had to call somebody, like one of the people that work on the at the station, to get the platform. I don't know if it's because we speak English and not Norwegian that they didn't really understand what we needed, or just because they weren't trained properly. I think it was the latter, because some stations are better than others. Where like we would ask for assistance and they'd be like, okay, somebody should be there when the train comes, and then nobody was there. So either the train would get delayed or we would miss the train because nobody helped us like we thought they were. So that was a bit annoying, because it was like it was a ramp that's like locked on the station.
Yeah.
Like in a little box you have to go to unlock with a special key.
Okay.
That was Norway. England is beautiful and gorgeous, and just their public transportation is amazing. It's Europe, man. Europe public transportation is amazing. England, you know, all the buses were super accessible. Everybody knew what to do. Like, they were all perfectly trained. It was quick. You know, the ramps were kept. They were maintained, so they wouldn't get stuck or anything like that. Some of them were electric, where they, like, press a button and it extends out of the bus. All of that. There was always a space in the bus for wheelchair usage, stuff like that. It was comfortable. There was enough space. You know, all of that. It was, like, really well done. So that was nice. The trains were the same thing. They were super, like, they were paying attention all the time. They knew what to do. So England was, like, smooth as it could be. We didn't even have a car in England. We would walk, take the bus, or take the train everywhere.
Wow.
It was great. Puerto Rico was, I didn't leave the neighborhood ever. We didn't have a car because it's really difficult to get an accessible van onto the island. Not only is the van like difficult to buy because it's expensive and you have to go through insurances and stuff like that, getting it onto the island is a whole like, you know, you have to go through the importation, imports process and like have it be accepted. And things in Puerto Rico move at 10 times slower speeds than they're supposed to. So it was just never worth the effort. And then other than that, there's just no public transportation in Puerto Rico, other than like private companies, which is then really expensive. So with my electric wheelchair, I wouldn't go anywhere. My mom and dad had their own like actual cars. So we would take the manual wheelchair. We would take it apart and carry it around and then go to places like that. So that was doable.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't really go much places. And then here in Ohio, the buses are pretty good. There are these smaller buses, like not full-size buses, but like mini buses, small car like things.
Yeah, I see.
Which have just like, instead of a ramp, it's a lift. And it's really, really slow. And I hate it. And I get really self-conscious because it slows down the schedule of the bus, and therefore anybody on the bus has to wait for me, and I get really like, I know it's not my fault, but I feel bad because now they might be late because of me and stuff like that. This lift takes forever to like come out and then go down to the floor and then go all the way up. It's just, it's really slow. It's like not effective. It takes forever, and I don't like it. Thankfully, that's not every bus, but because I'm not in the city, it's how to say, it's not like every bus can be the full size perfect one. And then I mean, I guess in Boston, because I've been there a couple times, Boston's gorgeous because it's a modern city. So they have Uber all the time, but not only do they have Uber all the time, they have accessible Uber like all the time as well. It's one of the few cities in the USA where you can like reliably get an accessible Uber whenever you need it. So I can always get from the airport to my home and like from my home to anywhere in the city super easily with an accessible Uber. It's comfortable. It's reliable. So that's really nice. And I'm hoping that gets implemented more in the US, but obviously that depends on the drivers and like population and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's something that Boston offers. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know Uber had its like accessible options.
Yeah, I don't know how you get there because I've never done it myself. My dad always says it because he's paying for it anyway. Yeah. But yeah, there's a couple places where you can do that where we're
seeing. That's great. Great to hear. Okay. And see, you mentioned, right, you know, going back to at least your experiences with public transportation in your university and in Ohio in general. You know, I'm assuming you've had quite a couple experiences, you know, with the public transportation. I kind of wanted to ask you about those. Are there any times where you might have gotten late because of the public transportation situation, or are there any good, positive or maybe negative experiences that you can attribute right to the public transportation that you might want to mention?
Yeah, 100%. Like the ones I said, if they're not trained at the location, and they just don't help you, the train cannot wait for you. So you just have to miss the train. Wow. And who knows when the next one comes by. So it could be 30 minutes, it could be 5. So that's been an issue a couple times. The little buses are annoying here because they're really slow. I usually don't end up late, but that's because I pick an earlier bus just to make sure I have that extra time.
Okay.
But I'm sure people in the bus have gotten late because of me having to use that bus and them not knowing or like, you know, accounting for that, which they shouldn't have to, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's been an issue. Other than that, I don't think. I mean, if it's really busy, sometimes because I take up more space than, you know, one person, I'll have to wait for the next bus. But that happens to anybody sometimes. So
it is what it is. Out of curiosity, and if there aren't any, there's no problem. Or if you can't remember any, again, no problem. Any positive memories you can talk about when it comes to this, you know, public transportation? Any good experiences, at least here in the university, in your university over there? On your time,
yeah,
in Ohio.
I mean, there's some bus drivers who are super thoughtful and like super, how do I say it? I don't know, they're always conscious of like optimizing what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always aware of like, because I'm in a small town, they recognize me and they know where I need to go and where I need to get off and stuff like that and get on. So they don't, I don't have to worry about like telling them every time I get on.
Nice.
Where I'm going to, because they already know where I'm going. And they'll always like, they know how to like help me strap my seatbelt or like put down the chair or whatever, lock down the chair, just because they know me more personally in that sense, like professionally, personally, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's that like comfort in, I guess, familiarity, but also reliability on a more human level. No, I don't have to worry about the system screwing me over or anything like that. I know that the people who are involved are willing to be flexible to help me as I need to, rather than being strict on, oh, but the rules say this. So, you know, so that's nice. Like the human side of things is always reassuring because I know I can trust people more than I can trust the system.
That's great. All right. Oh, great. Thank you for your, you know, your thoughts here on at least the, or your experiences on the public transportation, at least there in Ohio and, you know, I guess the many other places you lived in. I guess now we're going to be entering the end side of the interview here, and I kind of want to ask you a couple things. I guess they're more open-ended questions there. Here, for example, you know, I wanted to ask you things like, you know, how has your disability influenced your perspective on life, you know, on the world around you? I guess it's a really open-ended one, but I want to see at least your thoughts on how you'd answer a question or tackle a question like this.
I'll have to think of how to answer it because I could speak on this for an hour because my opinions have changed throughout my life. I actually wrote my Common App essay on something similar. But basically, I don't know. Okay, so I'm trying to think of where to start and
here.
How to start.
Maybe I should probably close in on a couple specific things. You know, how can I help you here?
Well, I've got an idea. I can say if you don't mind.
Yeah, no worries. Go for it, 100%.
When I was younger, I didn't really worry about it too much. there were some little things, but I didn't care because maybe because I had good friends. I don't know. But when I lived in Texas, that was throughout my like elementary school. I had a really accessible school and like really thoughtful staff. So I didn't struggle too much. The small things are like, oh, you know, I wish I could like get on like the play sets with the other kids and climb around and stuff. Honestly, I can't. So I'm like, oh, well, that's fine. Me and my friends would play pretend on like the pavement or the grassy spots or stuff like that. It was whatever. I didn't mind. I can't get physically involved, but that's not something I needed. So I wasn't too bothered by it. And then when I moved to Norway, I was still pretty young. And my family wanted to go mountain climbing. And I was like, oh, so I'm going to stay at home? And they're like, no, why would you stay at home? I'm like, well, what do you mean? How am I going to climb the mountain? And my dad was like, we'll figure it out. It's fine. And so I've climbed not once, but two times onto a mountain with my dad basically carrying me on piggyback. And I would be holding on. You know, I was still small and young enough so that it wasn't too difficult for him to do that. And he's, you know, a strong young guy. So I went up two mountains and I kind of realized, like, even if something seems unreasonable at first, I guess, it doesn't mean I shouldn't try or try to look for a way. Because, I mean, this goes back to Texas and elementary. I loved going to the pool and swimming, even though that wouldn't intuitively make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
For some people, like, oh, you can swim? And I was like, yeah, like for me, that was always something obvious, but I realize how that isn't obvious for everybody. Not everybody can swim with a physical disability. So I would just do things that I wanted to do and I would figure out how to do them and enjoy them my own way. So I kind of really cemented that idea in Norway with the mountain climbing. I was like, okay, I can like go places and see things because I have a supporting family. Like I have a very capable and supportive family that can help me make these things happen. So it kind of removed the roadblock of, I can't do that because I'm disabled. It was more of a like, can I do that and how can I do that? So that kind of followed with when we lived in Europe, we would travel a lot on holiday and we would go to all sorts of places. I remember one time we went to Morocco and we went to like an old historical place and the road back, like the path back to the car was over sand dunes, basically like desert ground that was really, really rocky and like uneven, you know, thin sand. So wheels sink into it very easily. It's really hard to push a wheelchair through or a manual wheelchair through.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of guys around us at the time. Because, you know, it's a tourist location. There's some people visiting with locals, stuff like that. And we were kind of looking around and trying to figure out what the best way was. And we were like, oh, we could just go back the way we came in. It would take longer. But, like, it's not, you know, impossible. We're not stuck here. And some guys walked by us and they were like, oh, do you need help? Like, oh, I mean, if you're willing to help. And there were, like, four guys. And all four of them, and then, like, my dad and my mom just, like, kind of lifted up the wheelchair from a different spot. So because there were so many people, it was light work and they just walked over the dunes and the sand and the rock while carrying me in the wheelchair super easily. Well, there's your solution, right? So I don't know. My perspective on life is kind of like never think that you can't get something done. There's always solutions and those solutions are even easier if there's people around you. There are people who exist to help you. Never be shy, never be embarrassed to ask for help. But also sometimes there are people that don't exist to help you, that are willing to help you anyway. So again, don't be shy to ask for help. If they say no, that's okay. You can figure out another way. But if they say yes, then that helps you out, right?
Yeah.
So it's always worth asking. So that's kind of a positive outlook I've had in life. And, you know, I'm an optimistic guy, but I'm also realistic. I would think it's important, as important as it is for me to mention the positive side, it's important for me to mention the negative side of like, even which this is going to sound contradictory, but even if I do believe I can find a solution for most things, sometimes I just have to accept that some things are the way they are, and that's okay. Like I'm okay with that, at least. I'm usually not disheartened by it, but some things are more difficult. Like for me, doing the zoology thing, I realize that takes a lot more work for me than for a fully able-bodied or fully mentally capable, because I'm not, like, mentally handicapped in any way, but there are some people who are, and they have their own difficulties the way I have my own difficulties. So, anyway, my point is, some things will take more work, and some things will be harder. And it's up to you if you're willing to take on that extra, I guess, effort. And if not, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no shame in that. You know, it's very important to balance what you can do and what you want to do and what you're willing to do. Otherwise, you're going to stress out about what you can't. And if you worry about what you can't do, then you're just going to be a sad person. And I think that's a waste of your time.
I think that's probably as beautiful as a message I could get to finish here off this
creative writing major, by the way.
It's on the spot improvising this, and it's perfect. All right. Well, yeah, thank you so much then for giving your time here for the interview. You know, it's been a pleasure. You know, it's my best friend for quite a long time, so I'm happy to have had this. Is a nice project to
gotcha, bro.
Thank you to you know, at least highlight a couple of those things that I wanted to, at least a couple messages to give out there for those who are listening to this interview in the future. It's great. You know, I think that's going to be it for this. You know, it's been a pleasure. You know, my name is Reinaldo Falcon, and my interview here is Alejandro Araque.
Alejandro Araque.
Perfect. And there we go. And thank you for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Bye bye.
Peace.